Up next, Lynn Andrews back with us. It's been about 9.5 years. Her latest work is called Acts of Power, Daily Teachings for Inspired Living. We're going to talk a little bit about magic, consciousness, and just what drives this planet next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Lynn Andrews is the author of 21 books, which chronicle her 3 decades of study and work with shaman healers on 4 continents. Today, she's recognized worldwide as a leader in the fields of spiritual healing, personal empowerment, and development. A shaman healer and mystic, Ms. Andrews is widely acknowledged as a major link between the ancient world of shamanism and modern societies. By the way, she thirsts for profound personal healing and a deeper understanding of the pathway to enlightenment. Lynn, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much, George. I'm thrilled to talk to you.
9.5 years. Where did the time go?
Oh, boy. Isn't that the truth? It seems like yesterday, my golly.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Your most recent book, Acts of Power, but 21 books out there. That's pretty prolific, Lynn.
I know. I'm very proud of that.
Good for you.
And, you know, every time I sit down to write a book, it's like I've never written one. I don't know if you find that, but.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes. Take us on a journey. How did this all start for you?
Oh, my goodness. It's such a wonderful story. I was living in Beverly Hills. I was married. I had a daughter. I have a daughter, Vanessa.
Good.
And I was literally at lunch. Beverly Hills Hotel, you know, couldn't be happier and more wonderful.
At the lovely Polo Lounge, probably.
At the Polo Lounge, exactly, George. I'm sure you know it very well. And I looked across the room, and I saw this gentleman with a cowboy hat on, and he looked like he was from another world. And he was a medicine man, Native American. And one thing and another, and we spoke to each other, and kind of the beginning of my journey. I was so fascinated with the Native American culture, and I had had experiences as a little girl. I had a best friend, and we used to ride together to school on our ponies. And I met her parents, and they taught me some beautiful things about finding spirits that live in the trees and the flowers and the animals. And I was quite young then. And then we moved, so that part of my life was gone. And I remembered it. And I started a search for a teacher because I could see lights around people, George. You know, I could see their pain. Or illness, and it was startling. And I mentioned it to a friend of mine, and she looked at me as if I'd lost my mind. And I thought she must be able to see that too, but she didn't. And she thought I was nuts, I guess, and realized that different, and that what was happening with me was an exception. And I was afraid to tell anybody else about it because my friends they were very important to me because my parents were divorced and I was not exactly in a secure position. And that started me looking for a teacher, and I studied things, but nothing really happened. Until I met this medicine man that I saw at all places, the Polo Lounge. And he was being interviewed by a film company that wanted to do a documentary.
Ah, okay.
Canada. He was from Canada. And one thing and another, we became friends and or acquaintances anyway. And he told me about Agnes Whistling Elk. I went to an opening of beautiful art on La Cienega one night, and I saw this beautiful photo of a marriage basket. It's what it said, the legend underneath. And I thought, I want that basket. I don't know why, but I was just so incredibly drawn to it. And I put my hands on the frame of the picture for a moment, and I could feel north wind in my hair. And I jumped back, and I thought, oh, my God. And I kept looking at it, and it fascinated me. And what I didn't know at the time is that actual photograph was an invitation to me from the Sisterhood of the Shields, which is a group of high-degree women from Australia and Nepal and so forth. And I went home that night, and I dreamed about that basket. It kept me awake most of the night. I called the gallery in the morning and wanted to come and buy the photo. I said, we don't have a photograph like that, and I don't know what you're talking about. So I went down there, and of course, they didn't have it. I started to go in search of the basket, and things were happening inside of me. I was in search of my own spiritual development.
At this point, though, did you have any special mystical powers or anything like that?
I could see lights around people.
Auras?
And I could see their, well, auras, but more than that. If a person was upset and really agitated or had a disease, I could see it. I could see the color of it. And I knew through the intensity of the color that it was something that needed attention. But I couldn't say anything to anybody. They would just, look at me and cross-eyed. So I, kind of went on with that and reading everything I get my hands on and trying to find a teacher. And suddenly I saw this marriage basket and this gentleman, this medicine man, who proceeded to give me a map in Canada, Manitoba, that would lead me to a woman named Agnes Whistling Elk in the north. And
was she a shaman, Lynn?
She is a shaman, extraordinary woman of high degree. And really, what was happening, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was an invitation. They'd been waiting for me for a long time, and they got tired of waiting. So they kind of came after me. They didn't physically come, but they sent this situation. So I flew up to Manitoba, not knowing where in the world I was really going, rented a car and followed this map. And an incredible experience through a storm and everything, finally got to this place, and there I walked, down a trail and found her cabin. And I knocked on the door, and I looked like a drowned rat.
And was she expecting you?
She was. She opened the door, Georgia. She said, what has taken you so long? Uh-huh. And she had long gray braids, and she was wearing a ribbon shirt, with long sleeves and a beaded medicine bag hanging around her neck, and, a long jean skirt on and boots. But she was exquisite. She was an elder woman of the most credible presence. Her eyes were like you know, this sounds redundant, but her eyes were like polished mirrors. And she was scary at first, and then she laughed, and she saw that I was uncomfortable, actually quite terrified.
Well, why were you so scared?
I was in the middle of nowhere. I had come through a storm. I didn't know who this woman was. And, you know, she was so impressive, George. Oh my God.
Were you questioning your sanity, why you were even out there in the first place?
Oh, yes. Yes, you idiot. What are you doing? You know, you're going to get into trouble and nobody knows where you are.
Now, how did she know you were coming? I mean, did you call ahead or this was just some inspiration she knew?
No, she had sent me. You do a lot of work with extraterrestrial visioning.
Yep.
I think, don't you?
Yes, we do.
And there is something very... That kind of energy is contained within this woman and another woman who my mentor, a woman named Ruby Plenty Chiefs. And Agnes, the woman meeting, was beyond, it's like meeting Dalai Lama. You know, you're impressed with their stature, their way of seeing right through you, their way of around you so that you become comfortable. And we sat at her little table in that cabin and we had coffee together and we started talking and she, you know, became my teacher.
And when you say teacher, how long does it take to train you to have the abilities that you now have today? Or I would assume you're still learning, aren't you? Yeah.
I think you learn forever. And, you know, you learn one level, and then you realize there's a whole level underneath that, and you're smart enough. You listen. Listen carefully.
What are the things, Lynn, that they try to teach you? Like how to use your consciousness, how to heal people?
Yes.
What are some of the aspects? Or
yes.
All of the above?
All of the above. But they teach through experience. So why I have written all these books, they're not how-to books, which, you know, could be so very boring. There are books about my experiences with her. In the book Medicine Woman, I write about this initial meeting with Agnes and Ruby and what happened and what I saw and how I felt and the things that they started putting me through, which were experiences. For instance, a place called La Caldera, and it was a canyon with a trail leading down, you know, around the side. It was terrifying. It was a narrow little trail, nothing to hang on to, slippery. And for me to learn about how afraid I really was to become more, to move forward out of fears into a place of perfection. They said, okay, we're going to be down at the bottom of that canyon, and you come down and meet us there. And if you don't meet us, then we're not going to work with you anymore.
Hmm.
And I proceeded down this trail and slipping and sliding, absolutely scared to death, very high. And there was something, they had left me a beautiful ruby of all things on a little shelf on the trail.
As a gift?
Well, yeah, but I didn't take it because I didn't feel worthy. I just looked at it, thought, God, how beautiful. And I just kept on going because they got all mad at me for not picking it up. And And I began to realize that I needed to find self-awareness and the fact that I am worthy.
Once you did, though, Lynn, once you started having these abilities, what was the first time you applied it to something? What happened?
Well, I think I met, we used to go to gatherings, and so, I mean, we still do, but we went to a gathering of people and others. And there was a woman there who she needed help. She needed encouragement. She needed kindness and love. And she was very hurt by her family. Anyway, I saw her immediately, and I just went to her, and I just talked to her, and I told her a story, you know, really about myself. And how I had come to walk this path of heart. And it helped her so much. And I realized that I did have the power to what I was feeling and transfer it to somebody else. I could kind of open those doors. And that's when I started writing my book. Agnes and Ruby both said, Lynn, we want you to write a book about our work together. And up to this point, they had asked me never to tell anyone about them.
Why was it so secret, Lynn?
Because they are part of nations, a tribe, if you will, a nation. And they didn't want to be known as would teach somebody who wasn't part of their nation. You know, they're very particular about things like that. If you know any Native Americans, you know what I'm speaking of. And they wanted to teach me because they said that it was written, that it was part of a prophecy that I would take my experience with them and the teachings, which are so extraordinary, the teachings and how you come to understand, the incredible abilities that you develop, your ability to see, for one thing, to really see someone and the truth of a situation. And it takes, you know, you have to let go of a lot to become a woman of high degree, which is like a master. and you have to understand unconditional love that you need to develop if you don't feel it. And you don't feel unconditional love because you're afraid. So you're working with your fear.
Hold on, Lynn. We're at the bottom hour. We'll be right back with you in a moment to talk more about these incredible powers that you've possessed from this and how you've been applying it. Some of the things that you have done. Her latest book is called Acts of Power. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Lynn Andrews with us, her latest book, Acts of Power. Lynn, would you say that a shaman is like a magician or not?
I think shaman is different from any other shaman. And I think it's someone who has developed the abilities to understand dynamic energy. they've learned to ride that energy like a wave. In my early teachings with the sisterhood, they taught me not to stand and fight that wave of energy, but to throw myself into it.
Kind of go with the flow, right?
But more than that, jumping into it so that when you relax and move with the current, you rise to the surface and you maintain your sense of direction. And it's uncertainty in life that is like that. We choose as shamans how to face it. And we learn the energy between all living things. And that sounds very maybe simplistic. But it's an extraordinary thing to really see that we're actually all of one energy and power. And it's a vast, unlimited source of energy. And it is, you were talking about healing a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, healing is, I think, what most people are looking for. And it's important to realize that energy is just energy. And it's not good or bad or dark or light. But you have to learn to focus it. Energy itself is pure and unaffected in its original state. But it's so powerful. So in shamanism, it's your awareness of energy that allows you to begin to use it, to tap into its power, to create life you desire, to bring healing to yourself, and then hopefully to other people, your loved ones, and then, of course, the planet that we live on. And within awareness of this, you make a shift of consciousness. And, we're looking at the chaos of today.
It's everywhere.
Yes, and it's the result of our resistance to the shift that it takes to become conscious. It is essential now more than ever. You have to look at the choices that you make, why you hold resistance in your body, which is what is creating energy knots, which then creates disease, and you block your life force. Unless you know how to clear all of the things that you have carried from childhood, we're given so much baggage, it seems, and we carry it. And we carry it throughout much of the world. And so economically, this field of energy is very stressed. And the stress spills over into your life, your relationships, and everything. And so I think that resistance depletes your energy, separates you from the Great Spirit, creating more chaos in your life, and therefore in the world. I mean, when you look at religions, when you look at belief structures, the way that we have lived as human beings, it seems like there's always, I believe this God and not in that God. And if you believe in that, I kill you. And it's always been a resistance to something else that you don't believe in.
How did the indigenous people, Lynn, understand this way before most people?
Well, you know, they warred a great deal. They did. But they counted coup more. It wasn't killing people oftentimes. It was touching them with their spear, their arrows, their whatever they used as a symbol of power. I think the early magnificent early traditions, whether it's Egypt or Native American, you know, but way before, I think the early Mayans, et cetera, definitely were aware that you had to clear your your ability to see. You had to take those veils and tear them away. Well, how do you do that? You do that with study, with finally having an awareness that allows you to begin to use energy instead of it using you, and to tap into its power to create the life that you want and the healing that you want. Energy is a study. If you want to be a lawyer, you don't go out and just be a lawyer. You study the law.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with healing. You have to take it seriously. It's not going to a couple of seminars and hanging your shingle out saying shaman in residence. But people do that, don't you think?
Tell us about your title, Acts of Power. What does that mean?
Acts of Power, I entitled it Acts of Power because I wanted to share with people what shamanism really means. And it has to do with your perspective. You learn how to go into a state of introspection, to connect with the body, mind, the place of power at the center of your being, located around your navel area. And it's the oldest form of healing on earth, and it's been practiced all over the world, probably 1,000 years. I don't know exactly, but I would imagine that. And
when you say healing, though, Lynn, it's also emotional healing, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, yes. And, you know, emotions provide the heat, the energy behind a ceremony, provide the process, the conduit. Healing someone, for instance, I was at a healing not all that long ago down in Mexico with my sister's teachers, other shamans, and we were healing someone, and we did it in the old way, which is we were in a little hut in the jungle, in the middle of nowhere, with wonderful women, that Soyla and her husband and all these different people that I work with down there. And the whole point of gathering in this particular environment was to raise the energy, to play the drums, to use the rattles, to sing and bring up the spirits of place, wake them up. They sleep in all the named and nameless things. And if you want to do a ceremony, you want to bring healing, the help of your spirit helpers. You wake them up. You bring them out of their slumber with emotion. You laugh and you cry and you sing and you dance and you tell yourself to move through the energy flow. And then you take that energy. This is an ability you learn. You learn how to direct that healing energy to someone who may be on the verge of dying from something. And I have never yet done a ceremony like that someone didn't move away from their illness.
Well, there was a study just today released, Lynn, that said that meditation could help fight cancers and other illnesses. That's truly remarkable, isn't it?
It's remarkable that they said that.
And admitted it.
I mean, I think it's true. But but it's not just meditation. It's how you meditate, how you hear somebody and help them to open their hearts and their mind towards the possibility of healing. You can't heal someone. You can't heal someone. They heal themselves. So somehow you have to bring them into that belief, own ability. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would you say in your career is one of the most astounding things you have witnessed? Something that would Lynn, you just shake your head going, I can't believe this, but it happened.
Yeah, well, I think it was a healing that I witnessed. And
what kind of healing was that?
Well, it's going to sound kind of strange, but it
on this it show, Lynn, there's nothing strange.
Well, it's wonderful. This woman had breast cancer. The shaman, it was one of the first things I had seen. This was so many years ago. But the shaman was what you call a sucking shaman. In other words, it was a ceremony. And the person would be usually down on a blanket. There would be a fire. There would be people playing, the rattles and the drums and she would surround this person with her power, which was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I could see it as light. It was so ridiculous. But she would put her hand out, and there was light coming from her hands and from her body.
And you could see that?
I could see it. And then what you call a sucking shaman. She sucked the out of that person.
Did she take it into herself?
She took it into her mouth and spit it out into a glass of water. It was water.
Do you remember the Green Mile?
Yes, I do.
Remember that part where John Coffey would heal people? And he would use his mouth to heal people, and those nasty-looking insects would fly into his mouth when he was sucking out the disease and stuff from people. Do you remember that?
I do. I hate that image. Just hate it.
I do, too. But I'm wondering if that happens to these shamans when they take in that kind of situation.
Well, every shaman is different. They use energy differently. They work. I'm with a lizard because a lizard can grow back its own tail.
Right.
So it has an energy that's different from something that cannot regenerate like that. And using that's really not the correct word. Becoming one with the energy of a creature.
But are you telling me that this shaman healed this person with breast cancer?
Yes, she did. And there was no incision. There was no hole. There was no blood. There was nothing except she was in a trance and the healer was in a trance and she sucked something out, this glass of water that turned dark.
Must the recipient be a believer in all of this?
I think so. I mean, I think there has to be something inside of the recipient that knows that he can be healed.
What if they have doubts? Would it work for the recipient?
They have doubt. Really? Oh, this is bullshit.
I can't say that. You can't say that, Lynn.
Forgive me.
Yeah. No. Family show.
This is... Forgive me. This is just not real. I don't believe that I can be healed. That's difficult. Because what they're doing is bringing in the entities around them that are holding the healing happening. Make sense? They stand in the way of the energy that you're giving them.
So if they're believers, it will probably work better.
Oh, yes. And when I say believe, this is not believing in anything. It's not like believing in a religion or anything like that. It's simply believing in yourself that you have the power to be alive. Every cell of your body is alive, and it's in a state of perfection. So you need to take the illness part of the body, the cellular structure, and move that structure over to the light.
Lynn, when we come back, I want to talk about the mystery schools that you have, and then we're going to take phone calls with you. Lynn's website is her name, lynnandrews.com. Linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about one of her 21 books, Acts of Power, Daily Teachings for Inspired Living. It's just remarkable what you can do with the power of your mind and suggestion, and that's what she's doing. But jump on board, make a phone call or two. Maybe you've gone through something like this, and share your experience as well. Back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM.